It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today, CBS 13's Jake Gaden. What's going on?
We are ready to roll. Jesse, get out the screen. We repping the Yankees today.
No, the Yankees won yesterday because Alex Cora couldn't get out of his own way. We'll get it today, though.
Okay.
It's hilarious, though. Real quick, just we'll set the scene for everyone. Oh, this is a little funny radio bit. No, Jake walks into the studio, and we don't even say hi. It's just kind of like, and just laugh at each other kind of thing.
Punch each other in the face.
Yeah, this is real.
I know. We literally looked at each other and said, like, really?
Yeah.
Really? Like, did you really have to wear that today? And
see,
I was like, yeah.
Even I have to sit in the middle on the screen.
Yeah, Jake's got to separate us right now.
I have to separate them, keep them on different screens so they're not punching
Ever since
other.
Jake called in 2 weeks ago after the Patriots beat the Dolphins and the Yankees beat the Red Sox in that one series, I've just been waiting. I need this game tonight. I need to answer it back.
Good luck.
Just out there talking.
Connelly Early, we are waiting on you today. All right, you're going to become a legend today.
A legend today? I don't know. All right, I think Aaron Judge might have a thing to say about that.
Oh, he's going to hit another single.
Oh. Hey, we could talk about the drop in left field.
Oh no. Yeah, I was mad at Jaren Duran too, man.
Don't know what to tell you. What are you going to do with your bullpen tonight? That's the real question.
We'll be fine. Garrett Whitlock. His arm's going to fall off.
Whitlock
everyone
pitched
else.
50 pitches last night.
Yeah, no, he's done. He's not pitching today, but we got the others. We got Peyton Tolley still. We'll be fine. It's just today, the key today, get to the rookie pitcher for both teams.
Okay.
I want to get to the Yankees bullpen, make Aaron Boone have to think a little bit, or get to his binder, whatever it is.
It's more like, as I told you yesterday, it's all about getting to the baseball nerds.
Exactly.
Baseball That's nerds.
Right. The ones that have been running the Yankees.
Yeah. All right, we are the Insiders. Welcome in. We're going to have more of this all day long because there is a heated rivalry here, even in studio, between the Yankees and Red Sox.
Is this still the biggest rivalry in sports? Like,
yeah,
just at its peak?
By far.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
What rivals with? Like, honest with me.
I mean, like in professional sports, like all over the place, there are rivalries that are pretty substantial, but I don't know.
But it's like Celtics-Lakers isn't...
Yeah,
this,
that's
though.
Not
it doesn't
really,
have the animosity
kind of,
anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of.
I don't think any rivalry in the NBA has that animosity.
The NFL is not the same. Like, yeah. It was. Like, yeah. You could say it was Chiefs Bills, maybe, but I don't know how much that's.
No,
around.
That's not storied.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Packers, Bears.
Bears.
Crystal Chore has a good one. Maybe Buckeyes, Ohio State versus Michigan.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. College wise, absolutely. There's some great, like, Georgia, Alabama. That's a great rivalry on the college level, but professionally. In any sport, I think Yankees Red Sox are still top line.
Yeah, it's tough to be in competition with someone like if you're the Bears when the only quarterback to lead you to the Super Bowl is Jim McMahon.
All right, that wasn't very nice.
Well, I mean,
and two, there's still genuine hatred like Yankees Red Sox. Like I hate the Yankees. I love Jake Gaines; he's a great guy. I hate the Yankees though. Like same for him and the Red Sox. I'm sure.
100%. Jesse's a great person.
It makes my blood boil. Like just the Yankees.
Yeah, I.
If
also
we lose,
hate
I want
the
them
Yankees.
To lose as well, and I'll be happy. It doesn't matter.
So what you're hoping for is a reverse tie instead of both teams like coming up with a tie, like both teams.
Well, it's like just the impossible happens and the Yankees win today. It's like if they don't win a World Series,
impossible
then I'll be just as happy.
Happens?
I'll be just as happy.
Impossible happens?
What, are we 10-5 against you guys this season?
Oh.
When it matters the most, people show up. We'll see tonight, my friend.
Uh-oh.
That's been the case for the Red Sox since Game 4 of 2004.
Mm.
For you guys, not so much, pal.
Okay. So I told you this is going to be going on all
I'm
day.
So excited. 5 o'clock. Lock in.
I also like, by the way, prime time tonight, 8 o'clock.
That was
like
perfect.
They moved it back. Like this is the one time I'll give a tip off to the Dodgers. Like not
yeah,
playing
thanks for
tonight.
Getting the Reds out the
thanks
way.
Thanks for getting the Reds out of the way. Prime time baseball tonight. Like okay, Jesse and I were talking about this when we first came in. And same with you, James. Like this has been great baseball. Not one, and two, like, you could, if you're a baseball fan, you couldn't have asked for a better wild card series, right?
All like, of them.
All like, of them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm here for all of the wild card series. I think, you know, again, they've been really, really good, except for the Dodgers-Reds, but, you know, the Dodgers buy everything, so it's not like...
It's more about the Mets failing
yeah,
than
that's
whatever.
Pretty, I was
like,
literally,
that's the
thank
issue.
You.
Yeah.
And let's be real here. Jesse, can you agree with me on this? The Mets are our little brother. Okay, the little brother got to the NLCS last year, and they talked a lot of talk. But now little brother, go back in the corner.
Yeah, as far as New York goes, yeah, the little brother.
Shout out to Pete Youngman. He's a big Mets fan. I feel bad for Mets fans.
I don't.
No,
that makes sense.
They shoved it in Yankees fans' faces all year that they got Juan Soto and thought Juan Soto was going to be the coming of.
Every single Yankees player.
Yes, basically. Ever. All right.
Like the Yankees seventh hitter.
And then what happens? They don't even make the playoffs with acquiring him. It's just like, and they tried to shove it in our face the whole entire year. And when you sit there and you say, well, even with the best player in baseball, because I think it was Juan Soto was the best player in baseball. I think there's no competition with it. And you still can't make the playoffs. Sit down, my friend.
I don't think he's better than Shohei.
Oh, yeah. But, best player in baseball. Plays in LA, sir.
Yeah, he does. I'm just saying.
Brother, come on. He's going to start game one of the NLDS right now. He had two home runs in the game one the other day.
Can we do this? Best hitter in baseball? Or do you think Ohtani still is a better hitter?
I think Ohtani's the best.
Best all-around baseball player. Yeah.
We've seen all things considered. In a long time.
Since Babe Ruth, by far.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. No,
since Barry Bonds.
Oh, no.
Yankee guys keep trying to sneak in that Babe Ruth stuff.
No. Oh, the Giants fans trying to sneak in Barry Bonds.
Well, Barry Bonds is very sick. He might have, you know, taken a couple pills, but that's
maybe.
Who amongst us in the MLB didn't take steroids? Let's be real.
It doesn't make it right. And who knows about Jeter? I'm not convinced that anybody from that era is clean at all. So the Yankees beat the Red Sox 4-3 yesterday. We do need to get boxing gloves for these two and let them just, you know, beat each other up here in the studio. That would be fun.
I feel like both of these games have been a tale of the two managers right here.
Yeah.
Boone kind of going the analytics way game one, and then Cora just not managing enough. Needed to pull Whitlock in the eighth inning after he walked Jazz. Didn't. Then you give up the hit to, what was it, Ben Rice?
Yeah.
Yeah, give up the hit to Austin Wells.
Austin Wells.
Yeah, Austin Wells. You give up the run there, and then Jaron Duran dropping the Judge liner to left. That killed him. And then Jazz Chisholm was probably the MVP for the Yankees yesterday when he made that diving play at second. Kept it from Nate Eaton from scoring, and then, yeah, they weren't paying attention when the first baseman didn't get it. But. Well,
the other thing is this. This is why I freaked out yesterday about Jazz Chisholm when I had my crash out yesterday on D'Lo and KC. Like, that's why, analytically, I can't stand some of the things that the Yankees do, because Jazz Chisholm, no offense to any second baseman they had in there, I think it was Ahmad Rosario, but, like, he's a better athlete, a better second baseman. I don't care if he's a left-handed bat. Like, he is the better player. He's 31 for 31 this year. 31 stolen bases, 31 home runs. He's had a career year with the Yankees, and he shows up when it matters the most. And he did that last night. He played one of the best. Like, people don't talk about this. You know, the at bat before Austin Wells got the double or the single down the line that scored scored Jazz. Just some at bat prior to that, which is like an 8-pitch or 9-pitch at bat against Whitlock, was one of the best at bats of the night. And he caused a walk because of it, and then got on and then scored from there. So that's why you have to play your best players every single game in the playoffs. I don't care about analytics. And that's why tonight I'm really intrigued to see, do they go Goldschmidt at first? Do they go Ben Rice at first? Who catches with Austin Wells? Is it Ben Rice who's catching?
Ben Rice has been really good.
His bat has been phenomenal. The fact that he had his first playoff at bat was a home run yesterday.
Yeah, it made me sick.
It's fantastic. Fantastic. So, I don't know. I think you hit it on the head, Jesse, with what happened yesterday in terms of this game. Tonight, I think storylines going into it, like you said, was the pitching matchup between both the rookies. Schittler for the Yankees has been really, really good. I think he's why are you laughing right now?
That's his name, James. It's fine. We're fine. We're not going to get fined. That's his name.
Okay. That's his name. I think he's been really good for the Yankees. His stuff's been nasty, especially in the past month of the season. Early is his name, right?
Yeah, Connelly Early.
Connelly Early made his MLB debut actually here in Sutter Health Park. Fun fact. Okay, against the A's.
First two starts against the A's.
So I think he's another great prospect. I think, like Jesse said, it's going to come down to the bullpen.
Yeah.
What pitcher you get to first, and then the Red Sox, they taxed their bullpen last night. Yankees still have all their arms out there. I'm very intrigued in who they go to tonight and how it all looks. Coming down to 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th innings.
Oh, Jake got it on the note. That's what it's going to be today. We'll see. Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm excited. Like, this is perfect. Tune in. This is perfect. Like, I wanted this. We wanted this. Yankees, Red Sox, baby. Like, come on.
One fan goes home happy. The other one distraught for 2 months, yeah, at least.
Seriously, if the Yankees lose tonight, not only will Jesse be just dancing in his living room.
Yeah, mute me on Twitter.
Yeah, I will. All right, but I will probably just be distraught for 2 minutes because, like, Jesse, I don't know how you feel, but like baseball is my first love. Like, literally my first love.
It's always been my first love.
It's just, yeah. There's something about it that I just connect with the game more than any other, you know.
I'm kind of bummed, though, because I think the next generation, it won't be.
No, it's going to be the NFL.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lot the NBA as well. Yeah. I just, baseball's lost so much of its fan base, and it's their own fault.
Yeah.
I mean, it's things like the A's, mm-hmm. like that you allow things like that to happen. Okay, outside of their game.
Yeah, there are other games, by the way.
Yeah, the Padres won 3-0 to even the series with the Cubs at 1-1. Mason Miller was absolutely insane. You see, like the
104 in the corner?
104.5, the fastest pitch in playoff history since they've been able to record that. But he pitches an inning and 2/3 and strikes out 5. Struck out everybody.
That is why they gave up their top prospect to acquire him from the A's this past offseason.
Yeah, if you get through this round and you somehow, you know, like make a run here and Mason Miller is all part of it, then it was all worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even like watching yesterday, he like started to make that trade completely worth it because they gave up a lot. Like, well, DeVries is incredible.
DeVries might be the starting shortstop or second baseman for the A's next year. That's what they said in the press conference. Like, he's going into major league spring training next year.
Yeah, he's 18.
And he's 18.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, Mason Miller's under contract for 4 years, but
trade a closer for the number 3 prospect in baseball.
I ain't gonna complain. Yeah.
No, he's incredible. Watching him, I mean, he in the Double-A playoffs hit 2 home runs, and one of the home runs was just a shot. Yeah, I was telling Kyle, he reminds me, his swing and his stance reminds me of Edgar Renteria.
Yes.
Yeah, just really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the body frame, the way that he swings through the zone, like very, very interesting. So again, Manny Machado hit a 2-run shot in the 5th to put the game away. Really, the Cubs were listless, didn't really give up. Didn't give much resistance. We had the Guardians roll. That series is now tied. It was a 6-1 win for the Guardians over the Detroit Tigers.
If you haven't been like locked in on Red Sox Yankees, this has been the series to watch too, just given the whole history of the last month with the Tigers blowing that 15.5 game lead.
Yep. Yeah, it's
and
wild.
Now it's just like, are they gonna be able to pick themselves up?
My question is this: when you look at Detroit, do they have enough pitching? Like, Flaherty's gonna be going tonight. Am I wrong on that?
I double check, but yeah,
I'm pretty confident Flaherty's going for the Tigers. Like, I think that's where you ask yourself, like, who's got the better pitching? And Scooble was great game one.
Oh, yeah.
Game two, I think it was, they had a...
Scooble struck out 14, right?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
it was.
Just lights out.
Game two, Cleveland just looked like the better lineup overall.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think game three again today is going to come down to the pitching.
Yeah, that's Flaherty going today for Detroit.
Who's going for Cleveland?
Sissoni, I believe is how you pronounce his last name.
I think it's been a good series. The collapse is interesting because when the A's played the Tigers, like, I was watching it, and they were so far up at that point. They're so far up on Cleveland, and that's sort of when they start to, like, unravel.
That was the start of the collapse.
It was the strangest thing ever. I've never seen a team that, like, can't catch a basic pop-up.
Well, that's the thing, too. As far as all the sports, baseball is the one most prevalent. It was like, yes, this team has the yips. You can clearly see it. Well, they're just in their own head right now. Like, football, maybe you can hide it. The same with basketball and things like that. But baseball is like, this team has nothing right now.
Yeah, and I think in basketball, it's individual players that get the yips. And then you just have to go somewhere else, right? Like, again, the Kevin Herter situation here in Sacramento. Like, not to pile on Kevin, but, like, he got the yips and they had to go in different directions. You know, but when it comes to... like Major League Baseball, I've never seen a whole team just...
It's like the flu. It goes like player to player. It's contagious.
Yeah, they literally look like little leaguers.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, what's happening? Like, and it was just like a middle of the summer series against the A's, and it was like, I've never seen a worse defensive performance than what I'm watching here. It's just crazy. But, you know, the A's had their own, like, 3-21 over a 24-game stretch.
Yeah, that was bad. They just 20-game losing skid.
Forgot how to play baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, their bullpen every single day would give up 5 runs. You're like, what is happening?
Couldn't hit, had multiple strikeouts. Like, guys were going, like, at least 0-3 with 3 strikeouts every single night. It happens. That's baseball. And maybe, James, correct me if I'm wrong, why I love baseball so much, because it makes me feel human. Because, like, I would go 0-3 in some of these games and strike out three times and then go for 2 for 3 with a double and a single, right? Like, whatever it may be. So it humanizes the game a ton.
Yeah, I think that baseball, like, it is a ultimate equalizer.
Well, yeah, it's like the Tigers went through everything they went through, but they win today. None of it matters.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Well, like all that bad feeling, all that negativity just out the door if you win today.
Yeah, it'd be great. Although I still believe in Stephen Vogt. So
that's your guy.
Yeah,
go for it.
He's one of those guys who, you know, stepped right into a managerial role and starts crushing it. Absolutely wild. One other thing we got to touch base on. I dropped in yesterday and talked about this on D'Lo and KC. Shout out to Sac Republic. They won last night 2-1.
Yeah.
And then they play in the Jägermeister Cup final on Saturday. I think they are the first NBL team to make it to the finals in 3 different cups. So, you know, the big cup that everyone plays
Open
in.
Open Cup.
Yeah, the Open Cup. And then I think their own championship cup.
USL
and then,
Cup.
And then now we're looking at the Jägermeister Cup. They're playing at Hart Health Field on Saturday. If you get your Saturday evening free, get out there. Go watch them. Go support your local team. They're about to get their new stadium is already breaking ground, and like, this is going to be a big deal. Maybe they'll be MLS, maybe they won't. Like, we'll see how it all plays out in the end, but they're very good, and they have been for a long time.
I think they're one of the most successful teams in Sacramento in terms of consistent winner. Every year they're competing for
what
it.
Are you trying to say, Jake?
Not that hard. I also, to piggyback off what you're saying, they actually clinched a playoff berth last night for the USL playoffs. So
yeah.
For Tier 1 or USL Championship. So I'm with you. You know, if there's one thing that I know for Sacramento, they show up for championship matches. Saturday should be a movie at Hart Health Park.
Yeah.
Like, if you are not there and you're not doing anything on Saturday night, because I don't think there's much going on here in Sacramento other than Aftershock.
Aftershock.
Like other than Aftershock, you should be there. Like, if you're a sports fan, the ticket prices are not astronomical. It's great. It's a great atmosphere. And if they win, you get to watch history in the making.
Yeah, awesome stuff. All right, we're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. I'm James Hamm. Jake Gaydon joining me today. Jesse Tapia on the ones and twos. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back in. I'm James Hamm. Jake Gaydon from CBS 13 joining me today.
Did you forget the number?
Always. There's certain things that stick in my head and other things that don't. And of course, Jesse Tapia is joining us. We spent the first segment talking about baseball, which is not something we typically do here a lot on the Insiders, but with it being playoff baseball and the rivalry between Jesse's Red Sox and Jake's Yankees, that was fun. Like, I like to see rivalries play out like in real life, and at least no one's like throwing a beer.
Yeah, James, you like to watch us stress out, James. You like to watch us potentially cry.
Jesse, my team literally picked up and moved.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It's gonna move again. Enough. You win. You win.
It's not wrong.
Yeah, it's tough. Training camp for the Sacramento Kings is going on. Yesterday was day 2 of training camp after Monday's media day. Jake, there's a lot to unpack here, and there's some perspective things that, you know, like, I do this on the Kingspeed podcast. We talk with Brendan about looking at the sports media world through a lens of someone who hasn't done it for 15 or 20 years, like Sean and I, and, you know, it's always like a fresh perspective. But I think the perspective that I was kind of hoping for from you is, like, I don't want to call it jaded, because that's jaded as a negative term, but I think most of the reporters here in Sacramento have like longstanding relationships with Doug Christie. We've known Doug forever because he was in the media. He was, you know, he had a local radio show. He did television. Me and Doug had a podcast for 3 years together. Like, most of the media people know him really well. And I just want to know, as someone who's just coming to this community in the last couple of years, you don't have this deep tie to Doug Christie. Like, even as a player, I'm sure you probably watched a little bit of Doug Christie in the early 2000s, but probably not even that much. And now you get to this point where you're covering him and everyone around you seems to be like BFFs with the guy. And you're kind of like, so what has been your perspective on him, like, stepping into this role and kind of figuring it out on the fly?
Different styles compared to him and Mike Brown, because that's who I can only compare it against.
Okay.
I think Mike was a lot of your way is the or the highway type of way. Said that, you know, he was the veteran coach. He had won championships before. He had just come off the Warriors where he had won an NBA championship with Steph and Draymond. And
he
Steve.
Had three there.
Yes. So when you look at Doug and his style, I think it's more of a style that's a player's coach than just a coach. And I think that has helped him transition into the role in a better way. Here's the interesting part. Okay, there's two things that I've noticed so far in camp when it comes to Doug. One, every single day he has a different player break down the huddle.
Okay.
Have you noticed that at all?
Yep.
Two, he doesn't talk at his players. He talks with them. Trying to come from a perspective like, hey, let's understand it instead of being not dictatorship, but like...
I think that that's a player, like he's a former player, and I think that's what you get from a lot of former players because they still feel like they're part of the group, even though they're not. Mm-hmm. Like that's like a harsh reality, but they're not part of the group. But because they've been one of those guys in the huddle, they feel like they're part of the group, and it's not like you're a total outsider. But there is a difference between being a player and being a coach, and it doesn't matter if you were a former player. Like, you have a perspective of a former player, but you're not one of them. Like, the locker room is, you know, is the player's world, and they have their relationships. And sometimes you can have really good relationships with your players, but there's always going to be, it's almost like the boss-employee relationship. It's like, hey, we can be friends, but at the end of the day, if I've got to fire you, I've got to fire you.
And that's the concept that I've picked up on, at least, like through two days. He seems more relaxed, too. I think last year I just felt there was a lot of times where he was extremely tensed and was looking over his shoulder a bunch of times. And now that he has Scott in there and Scott has given him reassurances multiple times that he's going to be able to lead this team moving forward and it's not like a one-and-done type of thing unless the things really go off the rails. And he also, I think we talked about this yesterday, and I think Zach LaVine said this on day one, and I asked him about it yesterday, is like, do you feel more comfortable with your staff around you, with Bobby, with Miller, with Mike?
Mike Woodson.
Woodson. And do you feel like you have a better situation because of that? You're not looking over your shoulder the whole entire time. And he said, yeah, like, you know, we have, you know, diversity in thought and unity in mind. I think that was the quote, right? Well, something along those lines.
Yeah, like, he likes to quote, what is it? Deepak Chopra?
I think it is.
Yeah, that's who he likes to quote.
And I think that is shown through, where it's not like he feels like he has to do everything. I've noticed that he is a more relaxed group type of effort of everyone getting on the same page. I also love, like, day one, Mike Bibby sitting there.
Yeah,
and Bobby comes over and they're messing with Bobby, him and Doug. I just it's a different feel. It's less pressure.
I think it's interesting because one of the things Doug Christie said this week about Keegan Murray is that he needs Keegan to find his smile. He wants to see him smile, and I actually
find his joy.
Right. I think Doug lost his joy at the end of last season.
Agreed.
I think it was like, because I know him very well, and watching him kind of unwind at the end of the season, I mean, he snapped at me one time. He snapped at Matt George a couple of times. I think Jeremiah, like, he snaps at Jeremiah like a foul ball snaps at Jeremiah. Sorry, Jeremiah. you caught a stray there, but you got to stop dropping foul balls in the press box.
Seriously?
I mean, when Mark Kotze talks about your inability to catch a foul ball, there's a problem.
There is definitely a problem.
There's definitely a problem. When I think Sean Cunningham has to give you a ball like you're a child that didn't get a home run or a foul ball, that's probably a problem.
Big issue.
But I think that watching him get to the end of the season, and I had asked him, I think my question was about, you know, the struggles at home, and he was very quick. I don't struggle at home. Like, we're winning at home. And I was like, yeah, but you still have a losing record. That's like, that's the way it goes. And it's like, yeah, but that's not my record. And it's like, okay, but it is. It's still your team's record. And so, but to watch sort of like the short-tempered side, like, he was exhausted. And I think that's what we saw. And you say looking over your shoulder, it was just a clear lack of trust with everybody around him. And so, like, we talked about this a little bit. Doug Christie, like, Mike Brown trusted Doug Christie enough to let him do the scouting report, like, on at least half the games, maybe more, right? So there's trust there as far as, like, who you are as a person, who you are as a coach. I felt like that they had some sort of, you know, like, ability to connect. But once Mike was gone and Doug was put into place, I don't think Doug really trusted a lot of people to do the scouting report. And so he ends up doing the scouting report by himself because he doesn't have that trust. That so if you can't delegate at the NBA level, and it's something that Doug talked about right away, like, it's just how many people I'm managing. Like, it is so many people. Like, you have the media relations staff, you have the training staff, you have the medical staff, like, you have all of the assistant coaches, and then you have the layer below that, all of the development guys and the ball boys and all that stuff. All of that falls under your preview. And so I really do think he just got overwhelmed. And I'm glad to see sort of this reset button and to see what he can do. I mean, again, last year was a complete disaster, still ran 27-24 in a 51-game stretch. To me, that was absolutely incredible with what you were up against, with trading your best player, with firing your coach, with, you know, having a whole bunch of other trades that just, like, messed up your entire roster. It was a very interesting season, and, you know, I'm glad to see him kind of come through the other side and see what he can do with this group this year.
Agree. I think that's the intriguing part for me, is what he can do with the group now, because he's putting his own fingerprints on this team now. He's changing defensively. I think it's still going to be the same. I love that they're picking up 94 feet and they're going to be running out a lot, and they're going to be the most well-conditioned team in the NBA. But offensively, I think we're going to get into this a little bit, James, is how it looks differently, or how it looks different, especially with how they use Domas this year, and then and then also Dennis, and how Schroeder looks different at the point guard position, how they use him. Because again, big picture,
yeah,
right? Ton of talent. Like, I mean, really, there's a lot of talent on the team.
Yeah, I mean, there's Zach LaVine is a two-time All-Star, a six-time All-Star at the small forward position, and a future Hall of Famer in DeMar DeRozan. Domantas Sabonis is a three-time All-Star and two-time All-NBA player. Like, yeah, that's talent. The Keegan Murray's number four pick in the draft, and while he's not putting up number four pick in the draft offensive numbers, he's become an unbelievable defender. You know, you do have a bunch of NBA rotational players in your building.
I want to also give a shout out to, I think, Malik Monk could have won Sixth Man of the Year. You're going to have a Sixth Man
twice.
You have Keon Ellis, who came from absolutely nothing to being one of the best defensive players, 3-and-D guys on your roster, maybe in the NBA.
Yep.
And then on top of that, Dennis Schroeder is a MVP of the EuroLeague this past year. Like, the talent is there. It's when I am, and I have said that from the start, and I'll continue to say it, I am intrigued to see how Doug puts this whole thing together. And that's where I think if Doug will succeed or fail is offensively. Defensively, I think they'll be fine. I really do. I'm not. I think size-wise, it's going to be an issue. I think not having a true backup, not backup center, but true shot blocker is going to be an issue roster construction-wise, and they're undersized at the forward position. But offensively, I am very intrigued to see how this thing comes together.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, I don't know if they've got. Like, I know they've got talent, but there's a big difference between, like, talent, you know, a team on paper and a team in functionality and in reality.
Efficiency.
Yeah, like, I don't know that they're going to be able to shoot enough threes. I don't know if there's, like, some limitations to this. But at the same time, like, Doug is going to write his own script here. That's what he's doing. He's trying to write his own script, trying to figure out how he can make this his team, despite it being very similar to the team that he inherited last season. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it all works out. I thought yesterday one of the other cool things we got to see was Doug, after practice, went over and Scott Perry and B.J. Armstrong and Alvin Gentry were sitting there, and they're messing with him, and they're laughing. They're having a good time. Like, day one, it was Mike Bibby and Bobby Jackson and Doug Christie. Day two of training camp, it was very specifically Doug with the front office. And that is such a huge break from what we saw last year. I mean, Monty McNair wouldn't come to practice. Like, maybe a couple of times the entire season. Wes Wilcox on occasion was there. But there wasn't, like, these moments of, I don't know, like, camaraderie. It was like Wes is there. He might have a quick conversation with Doug after practice or with Mike after practice. But overall, there was a clear divide between the front office and the basketball team itself, the coaching staff, everything. I don't see that this year. It feels like, again, it's early, so there's a lot of kumbaya moments early on, but it still looks like they're on the same page and working to help each other achieve success.
There was a disconnect last year, and that's where DeMar, I think, was talking about from opening night or from media day of the blank show that was last year internally. Yeah. And I think it starts right there. From ownership to front office to actual team, I think there was a massive disconnect between all three main pillars, and that was the blank show that DeMar was talking about.
I'm even going to throw in, I think you missed, there's the owner, there's the front office, there's the coaching staff, and then there's the team.
Yeah.
Like that, and then that was a big piece to this because there was some friction between ownership and coaching staff. There was some friction between front office and coaching staff. There was some friction between players and coaching staff. And I'm not saying that it all came down to the coaching staff being a problem, but at the end of the day, that's why that coaching staff isn't here and a new one is.
Same thing with the front office.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no continuity.
None.
And so that's where you're hoping that this thing can get better. And that's what, like, again, we talk about this, like, hope springs eternal every year for every team. Like, if you're a fan of the NBA and you're a fan of a specific team, until your team goes, like, 2-8 to start the season and you're already out of it, you're in it. You know, you go 4-4, you go, 7-4, all of a sudden you're in it. Like, and that's where the excitement builds. But I think that walking into this season, there should be a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe a more positive cloud than what I think we initially thought, just because it does feel like everybody's on the same page. Everybody's pulling the same direction and everybody is hoping that Doug succeeds. And I'm not sure that last season everyone was hoping that Mike succeeded.
How important is the first 15 games for this team?
I've
said it's extremely important just because of how many games are on the road.
I agree, and it, like, I looked at the first 19, and, like, just being completely honest, like, 4-15 is on the table, 5-14 is on the table. Like, the first 19 games are brutal. You play Oklahoma 3 times. I think you play Minnesota 3 times. You're playing, like, top-tier teams again and again, a lot of them on the road, and then the games that are maybe what you would consider winnable games, most of them are on the second night of a back-to-back. And you're like, wow. But then, you know, someone that was covering, I want to say it was Philadelphia, somebody was covering a team and posted, oh my gosh, the team that they're covering has 8 games in 12 days in the first 3 weeks of the season. And that's absolutely insane. Like, that's wild. That's how you wipe out a team. That's, to be honest, that's how injuries happen.
Agreed.
So I'm intrigued because I think everybody's first front half of the schedule isn't easy. And then the problem the Kings have is you get to the final 20 games of the season and also in the schedule, you get past the All-Star break, there is a really good chance that they could make up 5 games in the final 25 games in the season. Like, they could easily claw their way back in. So you're going to get to the trade deadline and you're going to be like, okay, what do we do? Because, you know, this is typically where if you're not a 500 plus team, if you're not in it for the playoffs, if you're not in competition, you're looking at that final 25 games is, okay, I need to get Nate Clifford. I need to know what Isaac Jones is. I need to know what Maxime Reyno is. We need to start getting them acclimated to the NBA, playing them big minutes, Keegan Murray, Keon Ellis, Devin Carter. Let's start playing these guys, right? But if you're looking at this and you're even remotely close to 500, that is not what's going to happen. They might make a trade to load up at the deadline. They might make a trade to change the roster a bit, but to improve and try to get cooking in the second half, because that's kind of the way the schedule is.
And that's what the intriguing thing is. Again, first 19 games, 15 games, I think, like I said, will dictate the season of how it's going to end, the direction that they go heading into the rest of the year.
That's right. All right. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to talk about something Jake brought up there a few minutes ago, the Domantas Sabonis situation, and where is Domas going to play? And we know he's a starting center on the Sacramento Kings, but he can play all over the court, and it sounds like that might be the case this year. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. I'm James Hamm. Jake Gaydon's joining me from CBS 13. and Jesse Tapia is working the board. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm James Hamm. He's Jake Gayden. Jesse Tapia behind the glass. We've been talking Sacramento Kings the last few minutes here on the Insiders, and I've got some questions, Jake. We're going to dive into the Domantas Sabonis like sort of situation and how they might use him this year. But before that, during the break, we talked about a little bit about like the rotation. You think Nick Clifford's already in the rotation, the top 10? To be honest with you, I don't know how he wouldn't be, because I mean, you look at the starting five is set. At least it looks like, you know, Dennis Schroeder, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Keegan Murray, and Domantas Sabonis, right? After that, like, who are your next five?
Malik.
Yep.
Keon.
Yep.
This is where it gets tricky.
This is where it gets tricky.
So, Neek, I think, is there on eight. But I have questions on who's backing up Domas. Like, is it Eubanks? Is it who's the guy that they acquired from the Nuggets?
Dario Saric.
Sorry, Dario.
Super Dario.
He's forgettable. Like,
his career the last couple of years has been forgettable.
Like, they brought him into the Warriors, didn't do anything there.
He was okay with the Warriors.
He was better with the Suns.
Yeah, you know what? Like, this is kind of a weird comp, but like here in Sacramento, we had Nemanja Bjelica for a couple of years, right? And Nemanja Bjelica ended up being a way better player than anyone thought he would be. Like, you put him on the court, like, holy cow, he is way better. Like, even though he's in slow motion, he somehow blocks shots. You know, he does chase downs. He closes out, like, on a driver to the basket. And you're like, how did that just happen? You know, shooting threes were incredible. Like, his, like, range was unlimited. I don't know that Dario Saric is going to be that, but Nemanja left Sacramento, went to Golden State, and kind of filled that same exact role for the Warriors, like the stretch four role. Whatever happened last year in Denver, I have no idea. But like, he was very clear on media day, like, yeah, I like signed up in like two games into the season. They're like, okay, well, you're out of the rotation. And he's like, why'd you sign me then? You know, and then he sat there for months, and then they asked him to get back in there. And he's like, okay, I haven't played in 30 games. Like, how am I supposed to catch up to a bunch of people that have been playing every single day, playing 30 plus minutes a night, and now I'm so far behind the curve. Like, there's nothing you can do to stay in NBA basketball shape. Stay in shape is one thing, but getting on the court and running is a whole different thing. So I don't know if he's going to get that opportunity here either. You know, to me, he looks more like a $5.6 million trade chip at the deadline. But there's also a possibility that Doug relies on a veteran player.
Agreed, at least at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. But I still think Maxime has a higher ceiling over him and Eubanks. I think if Maxime can catch up and do what he did with Domas has said, he's looked good so far in camp and worked with him in the offseason down in Napa. Like, if Maxime can catch up, I wouldn't be surprised if he also cracks the top 10. Where I'm struggling to figure out is the backup point guard position and where Devin Carter fits.
Okay. I don't think that for me, it's not that difficult. Like, shoot. Like, first of all, like, unfortunately, I don't think he fits. I think he's the fifth guard.
Can I ask you why?
Well, yeah, because I think he's the fifth guard and the four guards in front of him are all, you know, 25 to 35 minute players.
Even if let me speak English here, Jake.
Yeah.
What about the defense that he brings?
Okay, well, his defense is fine, right?
I think it's better than fine. I think it's on the upper echelon of fine.
Okay, no, I get what you're saying. I mean, he's got a huge wingspan for a guy who's 6'1", right? So, you know, he's 6'8" wingspan.
Yep.
Like, he's got a tremendous wingspan, and he is aggressive on the defensive end. The problem is that when you go to the bench, Malik Monk is going to handle the ball. Like, that's how it's been the last couple of years. He plays some off ball, and he certainly plays off ball when Domas is in the game, or they get in the two-man game, whatever. But either way, like, he's a scoring guard that has a ball in his hands. His usage rate, everything else tells you he's going to have the ball. Keon Ellis is going to play a ton of minutes. He realistically is your best perimeter defender. Like, Keegan is wonderful and versatile. I still think that Keon Ellis is a better perimeter defender. So that's where you have the problem. Like, I just don't think that there's minutes, because we didn't even mention Zach LaVine and Dennis Schroeder. You know, Schroeder's going to play, what, 28 to 32 minutes a night?
Easily.
You're going to get 33 to 34 minutes a night out of Zach LaVine. Okay? That leaves you at the point guard position.
8 minutes?
Yeah, but Malik's got to play those minutes.
True.
Right? And for that matter, like, Keon has got to play behind Zach LaVine. So you're going to end up stealing minutes from the small forward spot just with those two players, with those four. So I don't know how Devin gets on the court. Now, it's possible we see him early in the season playing 3 minutes here or 5 minutes here, but I don't think that we're going to see him, like, as part of the 10-man rotation.
Okay.
And that's not to say that Devin's done anything wrong. It's just, number one, he's not a natural point guard. He's an undersized two. And, you know, what he does offensively is hit and miss. The other guys are more refined as basketball players, and they have specific roles that they play. You know, again, Keon is the defensive-minded guy that you have to put next to Malik Monk to have him pick up the most difficult perimeter, you know, player on the other team. And I'd say the same thing about Dennis Schroeder and Zach LaVine. Like, Dennis Schroeder has got to play. Keon Ellis and Dennis Schroeder have to be on the court with Zach LaVine and Malik Monk the whole time. And I don't care what combination it is, one of those guys has to be on the court to help the other two guys at any moment, right? So I think it's going to be tough for Devin. And then Neek, I think you're right. He's probably going to play, and then you get to the back of four. You didn't even mention Isaac Jones. Do you think Isaac Jones is in it, or?
I think he's got to earn minutes.
Okay.
I think that's where he's at, where I'm at with Isaac. I think he played really well in Summer League.
Yeah.
And he earned a spot. How much of a spot he gets is going to really dictate on his shooting.
Yeah, and I'll tell you too, like,
and rebounding too.
When Doug took over the team last year, he didn't play Isaac hardly at all. And to me, that was, it's a trust thing. It's that, you know, they're all pulling one direction, and Isaac just isn't ready for some situations. I do think that Isaac should have played, and I do think that they would have been better with Isaac on the court than some of the other lineups that are running out there.
The Trey Lyles lineups?
Well, Trey Lyles, like, struggled, and not only that, but, you know, there are times where I don't think Valanciunas was the right choice to be on the court. Like, Valanciunas clogged up the lane, and Valanciunas, you know, did some good things, like rebounds and scored. But at the same time, there were, you know, the Dallas game sticks out so much, where you got killed by the dunker spot, you know, and we're not talking about, like, top tier players. They were down to, like, their fifth and sixth center, and who was it? The kid who's bounced around the league that was a top 10 pick. Center that put up like 18 points on the Kings in the game against Dallas.
Not Wiseman.
No. No, the one that was in Charlotte that kind of went a little bit sideways and they waived him.
No, not Miles Turner. Hold on.
No. So anyway, my point is that, like, I think Isaac Jones, like, fits in a modern NBA team. I think he can play small ball five and he can play a bunch of four, but I agree with you on his inability to shoot the three.
Not Daniel Gafford, right?
No, not Gafford. They lost Gafford and, Kai Jones. Thank you. Thank you, Chatty House. Kai Jones.
Coming in big.
Yeah. You know, again, a player I would have at least kicked the tires on this summer, because I think Kai Jones brings a skill set the Kings just don't have on their roster. Again, maybe there are some other things that are wrong with him.
Didn't have the roster space to bring anybody in this offseason to kick the tires on anybody.
You do, though. You still have an open roster spot.
And what, Terrence Davis that you're talking about?
Well, yeah. I mean, Terrence's spot isn't
guaranteed.
Like, guaranteed. And for that matter, like, you could always just buy out Saric at some point. Like, I think that there are ways in which you can open up roster space on this team. And they did not do it with a guy like Kai Jones or like a Mo Bamba type. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, not someone who's going to change the trajectory of your team, but someone who gives you something different. The length, the athleticism, the shot blocking that this team will walk into the season without. Right, it's one thing, like, people can laugh and snicker that, you know, Alex Len was your backup center last year, but Alex Len is 7'2" and a massive human being and a very tough guy and blocks shots and, you know, stands in the middle. But, you know, he did not have a good season at all last season, but there's still things that he brought to the court that the Kings are going to walk into the season without. So you bring up Reynaud. I'm intrigued to see what Reynaud, how quickly he develops. But I do think in the beginning, Drew Eubanks will steal the minutes. And eventually, maybe we get to midseason. Maybe we get to, you know, December, February, whenever it might be. I think that's where you might see Reynaud kind of step in. Unless the G League is rolling and he's playing in the G League and he's playing really well and you're developing him there and you think you're moving the right direction.
I think that's where, again, go back to the conversation we had maybe 30 minutes ago of what happens in the first 19 games. And the first 19 games are going to dictate the direction you go. If it's working out with Drew and Dario for the first 19 games and you're over 500, I don't think you switch it. But if you are under 500 after those first 15 to 19 games, I think then you start looking at, okay, do we give the younger guys a shot? And then you look at the Isaac Jones of the world and you look at the Maxime Reynauds of the world of like, hey, well, you know, do we give these guys more of an opportunity to show off what they can do?
Yeah. I do think that the Isaac Jones will break camp in the rotation. Like
you really do think so?
Yeah, if Doug wants to go 10 players deep, I think, you know, again, first of all, he's a really, really good kid. He's worked really hard on his body in the offseason. He's worked really hard on expanding his three-point range.
He can breathe now, by the way.
He can. He had a deviated septum.
How do you not...
I have a deviated septum.
But how do you not know that?
Yeah, I know exactly when it happened. My oldest was like 2 years old and headbutted me and shattered my nose on the left side.
But like, how do you, like, now he can breathe. And the biggest thing he said to us is I can sleep. I was like, oh my God, like not being able to sleep well at night. Like,
yeah.
Especially if you're an athlete, you need to recover in your body. No bueno.
No, I think that there's a lot to like from him though. Like he's a good kid. He's got a big time motor. He's got good size for the position. He's rangy. You know, he sits there and fights in the middle of the key. I think one of the problems this Kings team has is that over the last couple of years, like this player type has developed that the Kings have never got.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Nas Reeds of the world mm-hmm. that tear up this roster. Brandon Clark, when he's healthy, tears up this roster. The Kings don't have that 6'9", 6'10" guy, long arms, who plays physical, who's active, who gets on the floor, who jumps over the top of people, who bullies his way in on occasion and scores. And I think Isaac Jones I think they found one. It's just to what level, what degree is he able to, you know, step up and perform at the NBA level?
It's all going to be about his jump shot. If he's able to hit the threes on a consistent basis, which he worked on this offseason, he'll get more playing time because, again, that's what they need. The Nas Reeds of the world is what they're looking for out of IT.
Yeah.
IJ.
Yeah, and I think the good thing is, too, he's also watching footage. He's watching film. He's studying. He's studying Aaron Gordon. He's studying John Collins. That's mm-hmm. He told me that last year. Those are players that he looks at the player archetype that he could be at the NBA level, and that's who he's trying to convert himself into. I don't think he has the athleticism of either of those guys because, you know, Aaron Gordon is a slam dunk champion and John Collins is, for a guy who's 6'9", can jump out of the building. So that's going to be like the issue. Can he like step up and be more of that type of athlete? And I don't think we know that yet. So, all right. Hey, we're going to step aside. And when we come back, we've got hour number two. There is a San Francisco 49er game today, and I'm looking outside. It's foggy. It's ugly. You can't see like 10 feet in front of you. That kind of feels like what this 49ers game is going to look like tonight, not as far as fog, but as far as what they may look like as a group. So we're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. We'll see you in just a minute.